Hello, this is Gidon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet, for the first day of the second Adar. We're going to be studying Igrot Moshe, Yerideya 4, the fourth time Rav Moshe finds to discuss Yerideya issues, the first response in that section. It's going to be about the level of supervision we need in factories, in factories that produce food items. And it's dated Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet of 5744 in 1984. Rav Moshe Feinstein was already aged by this point. He knows he had difficulty writing the response because of how weak he is. I mentioned that first because he does, but also because I want to note that I might be cheating here. I try to find Shavuot written on certain dates. And this one is dated Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet without telling us whether it's the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet or the second day of Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet. Now, it happens to be that I have already recorded the Tshuvot of Rav Moshe Feinstein and of the Tzitzit for the second day of Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet. So I was kind of looking for a first day one, but also since I know that Rav Moshe Feinstein on other occasions, when he was writing on the second day of Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet, would write second day of Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet, I am going to assume here that when he just writes Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet, he means the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet. I can't prove that that's true, and it could be that I'm wrong, in which case I'm cheating a little bit here, but I also believe, as I've said other times, that having a little bit of uncertainty, even in my selection process, is a value for the larger project, finding Shavuot written on certain days, and then building up and seeing what happens, what you get out of a random selection of Shavuot, what overall picture do you get out of that? What picture does it create? So that's where I'm eventually headed. By the time you hear this, it's not another bet. I'm recording it here where there's not another bet, and the next year doesn't have another bet. So by the time you hear this, maybe I'll be closer along to the finishing of the project and seeing where we get to. So that's where we're starting. We start also with thanks to Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, to David Hochhausen, to the OU, for being the ones who help us get these shiurim out and available to those who want to listen to them. And now let's see what we're talking about in terms of hashkacha. Now, the question that he's responding to here is that somebody had approached him in some way about what seemed like a contradiction among responsa that he had written. And the first time he wrote about Yerideya issues, in Igrot Moshe, Yerideya 1:55, he had said that if a factory says they only use vegetable fats, we can trust them. So that seems like, rather than animal fats, meaning animal fats create a kosher problem, vegetable fats generally don't. If you're only using a vegetable fat or a vegetable oil, that shouldn't be a problem because vegetables are, by and large, other than bug issues, vegetables aren't a kosher or non-kosher issue, right? The real kosher issue is about live animals and which animals we're allowed to eat or not. The only reason why fruits and vegetables ever become an issue is because of bugs or because they might have been cooked with something else, but on their own, they're fine. So if the factory says, no, we only use vegetable oils, if we were able to trust them, that would make it a lot easier to, in terms of hashkacha issues. So in this early volume of Yerideya, this early discussions of Yerideya issues, Rav Moshe Feinstein agreed that if they say they only use vegetable oils, we're allowed to trust them. I mean, not that we check up on them, we're allowed to trust them. Why would that be? Because we do have a halachic principle in the Gemara that tradespeople, craftspeople, people who have professions, are not willing to risk their livelihoods. That's true in halachic context about doctors sometimes, about whatever it is, right? If I'm a if the standards of my profession are X, then I don't want to get in trouble with it. Or if this is where I make my living, I don't want to get in trouble. So the risk, if I'm found out to using animal products, it'll destroy my entire business. So we generally assume people don't take that risk, and therefore we're allowed to trust them. That's the halachic principle. Now, later in the response, Rav Moshe Feinstein points out that his son-in-law, Rav Moshe David Tendler, had correctly pointed out that whole idea usually only applies to small profits. That if I'm going to make a little bit of money from lying or cheating or whatever, and I'm going to risk a whole big business, that I won't do. So usually the difference in cost between a kosher oil and a non-kosher oil is so small that it fits this rubric that we'd say, I'm not going to risk my whole business on lying and saying I'm using an animal oil, because I might as well just, if I care enough that I want kosher customers, I might as well just use the vegetable oil, because how much of a difference does it make, right? That's usually true, right? So if I, come into my house and you're coming over and you're saying, listen, I need you to use a vegetable oil. And I say, fine, I'll use a vegetable oil. And I'm a professional chef and everybody knows this is what I do. I have a home business in which I have people come over for dinner and I make the dinner for them and they pay me some money and you have a dinner party that I make for you, which would be a very bad idea because I don't know anything about cooking. But I make the dinner for you and you say to me one time, listen, I want to come over, but I need gluten-free. And I say, absolutely, I'll do it all gluten-free. If you find out that I knowingly did it non-gluten-free, what will happen? You'll say, look at him, he's just a cheater. I paid, $1,000 for the dinner and he chews that, it'll ruin my whole business. So for the amount of difference between this and this and this, that I wouldn't do. But Rabbi Tendler had pointed out to Moshe. Moshe agrees. There are times when that's true. So, for example, I remember many years ago reading a book about the auto industry, like a novel. But somebody, there was some issue that came up, and they had to change something, and it turned out to be 50 cents. It was going to cost extra. And 50 cents doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're making 100 million cars, so 50 cents turns out to be $50 million, and that can be money, right? As Sam Rayburn once said, a billion here, a billion there, but here we're talking about even a penny here, a penny there. So when it becomes an issue that it becomes real money, then the whole issue of that people won't risk their businesses is not always so true. Sometimes they will risk their businesses. So Ramosha Feinstein agrees that where the stakes are high enough, you couldn't apply this. So first step is, it seems fairly clear that when he said you can trust to use vegetable oil over rather than animal oil, it has to be that the penalties for lying are sufficient that it wouldn't tempt them to do it. So if, for example, they lived in a country where if they lied about it, I remember hearing this growing up, I'm not saying it's true, but I remember hearing this growing up about milk. The reason why we're allowed to trust milk without hashgacha is if they say it's cow's milk, if it were ever found out that they used non-kosher animals' milk, then the penalties would be so significant. Nobody would ever do such a thing because there are government inspectors and stuff like that. So that whole question gets into this issue here. So that's where Moshe Feinstein has been saying in that original responsum, that the penalties and the cost of being caught using animal oils or fats when they said they're using vegetable fats. So that's enough that he thought that it was okay. Now the man who's writing for Moshe Feinstein now in this Adar Bet Tshuva in 1984 and 57-44 that we're looking at for the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet, he was pointing out that this tshuva of Moshe Feinstein's had become an important linchpin in the way mashgichim, in the way kashrut supervisors rely, do their jobs. Meaning, if you have a local mashgiach, and we're going to get to that situation where Moshe Feinstein thinks you must have a local mashgiach, if you have a local guy, so then he's popping in and out, whatever it is. But when you have national kashrus organizations, so one option would have been, theoretically, they could hire people, representatives in every town and everything, but that gets expensive and cumbersome, or they could hire guys who travel. So the guys who are traveling are really not there all the time. So one of the ways that they relied on, that they handled it, was they would rely on this responsive of Moshe Feinstein, and sometimes this man said, and we're not naming specific, he's not naming specific kashrus organizations, they would not only go there only infrequently, they might never go there because they got a list of ingredients. Moshe Feinstein seems to have said they could trust the list of ingredients, so that's it, they put the hashgacha in it. So that's a problem. He thinks it's a problem on its face, but it's also a problem because in another volume of Yigot Moshe, in Yoredeya 3.8, so a later volume, the third time Moshe Feinstein discussed Yoredeya issues in the 8th response and there, he had said, you can't rely on factory's claims about the fish that it uses. If it uses fish and it says, this is kosher fish, the good example is tuna. Tuna, as far as I know, is kosher. And they say, yeah, we use tuna in our products. Moshe Feinstein had said, in this third time, the 3 year, 8 of Yoredeya, had said, no, you need a mashgiach timidi. You need a constant supervisory presence. The mashgiach works there all the time. And the reason why you give him for that was that you can't trust the factories telling you, because the factories don't care that much. They'll trust whoever whatever fish the fishermen bring them, and the fishermen say, it's all tuna. They'll just trust it, and the reason is because they don't care. Because for them, it doesn't matter whether it's offered to tuna. They only care because they want to get a kosher supervision. So as long as they don't think it's going to risk their kosher supervision, they'll take whatever they're given, and they'll be happy with it. We, halachically, have a problem with that, and therefore you need a mashgiach there who can check it in all these situations. Not only do you need a mashgiach tamidi that is there all the time, but Moshe Feinstein says, in some situations, we allow what's called a yotzei v'nichnas. Yotzei v'nichnas is the mashgiach comes in and out. Like, let's say if you go to a restaurant, very often you'll see the mashgiach sitting out in the front reading or talking or whatever it is. Why is that? Because he only has to be yotzei v'nichnas. He only has to go into the kitchen periodically and at surprising times, so they can't do anything out of the ordinary because they'll know that they might get caught and they might get into trouble. But when it comes to fish, where Moshe Feinstein said that earlier, tshuva, you've got these big machines that skin the fish quickly. And once the fish is skinned, then you have no way of, it's really very difficult to know which it all looks like fish. So they can do batches and batches of fish between the mashgiachs coming ins and outs. And that's true. Moshe Feinstein means that even if the mashgiach is, especially when the mashgiach is coming from far away, because especially if the mashgiach is coming from far away, not only is it a problem because they can do whole bunches of batches and nobody will know about it, but also it's not really a surprise visit. Meaning if I'm sitting in the front of a restaurant, they're cooking the food in the back of the restaurant, I'm the mashgiach, and I'm going into the kitchen in and out, so they're doing little bunches that they never know when I'm coming, and they're not going to be able to do that much in between times that I come, so they're never going to bother trying to cheat me because they know that they're going to get caught. But if the owners know that I work in New York or Baltimore or L.A. or wherever my customer, or Chicago, where my customer organization is based, and now I'm going to check a factory in Alaska, so Moshe Feinstein says that's a problem, first of all, because in between visits they can do a lot of damage, but also, and independently, they can check plane schedules. They know I live in, I'm based in Atlanta, they check the schedule, when do planes come from, so you can say, well, I go through Seattle, like this and this. They can check and they can know when there are times when nobody's coming and they don't have to worry about it. So therefore, you need a permanent supervisory presence. That's where Moshe Feinstein had said. Seems like the two rulings are in contradiction. In one ruling, it said you can trust the owners when they tell you what they use. In the other ruling, he said you got to have somebody there all the time. So what's going on? So Moshe says there wasn't a contradiction, that when he was talking about you can trust the factory owner about what the ingredients are, that's where whatever the business was close to a sizable group of Jews, and he throws in, ideally even when Mashgiach lives, meaning, as I said before, when it comes to Yotzei V'Nichnas, coming in and out of a place to check on it, there's a difference between when I live in the area. So if, you know, it's a Coke factory, not that Coke lets people check on what they make it anyway because their ingredients are a trade secret, but let's suppose I'm going to be the Mashgiach at a Coke factory and I'm going to trust that they use only vegetable oil in their sodas, which is meaningless because they don't have oil in the soda. But I'm going to trust them. Moshe says, yeah, you can trust them. But that trust them is because, is the reason that I can trust them, is that I'm living right there. So if some big change were to happen in that factory, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, we have the right to assume word would get out. There are Jews living nearby, there may be Jews working for those people in some other capacities. There's a Mashgiach there coming in and out at some times. And we can assume that if they have big changes, we'll hear about it. But where the factory is far from Jews, any Jew, you know, any significant Jewish community, so that's where Moshe Feinstein said you need a Mashgiach Tamidi. Because there they can use non-greed or kosher ingredients most of the time. They can tell the Mashgiach on the phone they're using kosher ones, and whenever they know he's coming, and as I said, they can predict when he's coming because they know the train schedule stuff, or because he'll call them in advance and say, listen, I'm coming, or whatever it is. So then, and Moshe Feinstein points out that this difference in taste is often minimal, and only the most expert people can see it. So the whole issues of mirtat, that he's afraid of being caught, or that we're afraid he's afraid of losing his profession and losing his professional reputation, it doesn't apply because they don't think they're going to be caught. So that's his basic answer to the seeming disparity. Where a factory or a business, a bakery, you know, some kind of a food-producing business is embedded or close to a Jewish community, or is close to where a Mashgiach, a supervisor, actually lives, their emotional Feinstein thought you were allowed to trust them when they say, this is our list of ingredients, not trust them permanently and never go in, but trust them in the sense that this is what they say the ingredients are. We can basically trust that those are the ingredients because if there was a change in their process, the word would get out. But where they're isolated in some place in Iowa or Idaho or some other I state, right, so there, Moshe Feinstein is saying no, because they could change, they could do the wrong thing all the time and not get caught, and that's why he thinks you need a Mashgiach Tamidi in those situations. It's even more true, says Moshe Feinstein, in big factories, because in big factories, the owners often don't even know what's going on. So not only is it that they might lie, right? We're saying they might lie because they might get caught, it might be that they think they're telling the truth. They think they're using only vegetable fats and vegetable oils, but they're not the ones in charge of who actually make, they're not on the line actually making the food. Whereas the factory workers, as Moshe Feinstein says, all they really care about is the owner should be happy. When's the owner happy? The owner is happy when it costs as little as possible to produce the food that tastes good and that people will buy and want it to eat and is of a good quality. So what they want to do is maximize sales and profit. So if they come to realize that if instead of using a vegetable oil, they slip in an animal oil in a way the owner doesn't know, but it'll cost them, you know, 7 cents less a unit, and they sell 100 million units a year, so they're going to make the company $70 million extra dollars, the owner will just say, that's great, I'm so happy. And they don't have to say it's because we substitute. They just won't tell them. They say, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. So Moshe Feinstein is pointing out that there's a sort of subtext where it might be that the factory workers hear slightly different messages than we think that they're hearing. The owner will say to them, well, he'll say, absolutely, the owner will say, or she will say, use X kosher oil, and they hear, I need the rabbi to say that this stuff is kosher. So as long as the rabbi doesn't hear about it, then they'll say to themselves, let's use the less expensive one and make more money for the owner, who will be happy. He'll give us bonuses. He'll keep us in our job. He'll give us promotions, etc. So that's why Rav Moshe Feinstein says, you need a mashgiach, a permanent mashgiach, or one who's in the neighborhood who can come frequently without any predictable rhythm. So lots of writing on this guy. So now Rav Moshe Feinstein talks a little bit about the qualities this supervisor needs to have. This mashgiach needs to... So this takes a lot, and I think we talk about this casually without realizing the challenge in it. The mashgiach needs a lot of fortitude, because the mashgiach, Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks only Yirat Shamayim will help a person do this, and he also needs a lot of courage. He needs to be able to say to the business, listen, you don't let me in right away, I'm calling you non-kosher. Meaning, let's say he comes, and they say, you can't see this right now. He's going to say, no, sorry, unless I can see it, I'm going to have to say it's non-kosher, because I know what's going on. Never much by sense, he has to develop, and this is a hard thing. I think this is just hard as a personal matter. He has to treat them, the owner and the workers, with suspicion, because he has to always worry that they're going to try to find a way to use and do things that they think aren't an issue, but that he realizes make it non-kosher, and it has to be a real threat to them that they'll lose the supervision. If they know, right, that he catches them, he'll just warn them and this, so they might think it's worth their risk, right? That's one of the problems with whenever situation, when you have an authority trying to impose or ensure certain standards of behavior. So the people who don't want to do it that way because it's annoying to do it that way, because it's hard to do it that way, know that they can get away with it. Even if they know they'll get minimally punished, or they'll get a warning once or twice, warnings don't mean anything to them. So if you said to me, listen, I'm going to warn you, you better shape up. And then 5 months later, I catch you again. Because remember, you might not even catch them every time. 5 months later, I catch them again and say, this is your last warning. So in the meantime, they've made an extra $20 million. So they're not really believing, right? And if I catch them again in a year, and they say, you know what, I'm really sorry, Rabbi. I'm doing the right thing for all this time. And then I just was so tempted because of that. So they'll get, in the meantime, $70 million, and they might convince me to let them off again. So those are the qualities that a mashgiach needs to have. So I'm just giving some of the details, but Rav Moshe Feinstein, for example, he says, this is a thick, astounding thing, he says he thinks that the mashgiach needs to have developed, I guess either himself or in cooperation with the company, a list of acceptable suppliers, and he has to make sure that the company gives him their records to prove they're buying sufficient quantities of the needed ingredients from one of these manufacturers. Right, that's an astounding standard. It's not enough that I see it and they say, this is what we do. But most of the things, I have to go over their business records to make sure that over the course of months and years, they're buying the necessary amount. I mean, I have to find out how much kosher oil goes into each, whatever it is. Kosher fat goes into each, whatever product it is. Then I have to figure out how many units of that they make over 4 months, over a year, whatever. And I need to see manifests that say, see, we bought the right amount of kosher ingredients to be able to make that. That, by the way, if you use that standard, it would mean that even if they were thinking of using the other one for whatever reasons, the monetary benefit goes way down because they have to show you that they bought the right amount of the kosher ingredients. Theoretically, it's not perfect because it could be, A, that the animal fats taste so much better for some reason nobody can figure out, or that the differentiation in price is so much worth it that whatever, no, it can't be that, right, that if they skimp, they tell you, right, they can do it elaborately, they tell you, we only use this much oil in each item, but actually they use triple that amount of oil, so they'll buy enough kosher oil for that, you know, that smaller amount that they said, and then not use it at all, and still make money, so then you can do a problem, but it's still a much higher standard than I would have expected. Not only that, he says, you can't leave the mashgiach hanging out to dry. It can't be that the mashgiach, the supervisor, is the one in charge of it, so they can hate him because they'll know that he's the one they're in trouble. It has to be that when they sign on this company with the kosher supervision organization, that the contract clearly says, and so now it becomes, the Moshe Feinstein says, it should be, you need it in the contract so that the non-Jewish court, the law of the land, will enforce it. Meaning they're not enforcing a kosher issue, they're enforcing a contract issue. It must be in the contract that the mashgiach has the right to revoke their kashrut status. And that would mean that if the mashgiach says they did the wrong thing, the company will stand behind him and the courts will stand behind him. You need to have that kind of backing for this to work. Otherwise, we have to worry that he's not going to be willing to do his job because he's unlucky. In that same way, you need, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, the salary is a big problem, right? Rav Moshe Feinstein's solution is going to be that the kashrus organization pays his salary. which is, and the reason why he does that is very clear, right? If you get the money from the company itself, then if he says they're not kosher anymore, they'll A, possibly decide, okay, we won't be kosher, we'll give up on the Jewish customers. That's one possibility. Or the another possibility is they'll go and get another kosher organization that they can work better with. So if his salary comes from the company, it's a big problem, because then he has a stake in continuing and saying they're kosher. And that would be the kind of thing where if something goes wrong, he'll say to them, listen, I don't want to lose your business and this, but you know, you gotta shape up, rather than revoking their thing. So revoking their kosher status. So therefore, Moshe Feinstein says, no, he has to get the salary from the kosher organization. Truth is, while I understand what he's saying, I'm not sure personally, Gideon Rothstein, GROTHST@gmail.com, I am not confident that necessarily solves the issues, because the kosher organization has a stake in keeping this company happening. So Moshe Feinstein is trying to say, I'm not questioning him at all. My point is only I'm not even sure that this does it sufficiently. If I have a company that's paying, you know, Joe Kosher's organization $2 million a year, now it could be that they make $600 million a year. It's still true that $2 million, $2 million. If they say, you know, we don't like this guy, we think he's being too strict, we think he's doing that, what's the Kosher's organization going to do? So ideally, obviously, they're going to say, well, he's our guy. They'll check in with him and whatever. But if they start checking in with him and he knows that there's pressure, what's he going to do? So the Moshe Feinstein says it's supposed to be that he needs to know that he is not required to in any way try to curry favor with this group. Just not, I'm just noting it's not so simple. I remember many years ago, I had a friend who ran a business, whatever it was, a business that produced foods, whatever it was, and I'm leaving out all the details so you can't possibly identify it, but this friend of mine needed coach supervision, and they were running it out of the house. They needed coach supervision company came in and told them what they needed to do, and they did it, whatever it was. Friend mentioned to me that the coach supervision company, because they were such a small business, took a percentage rather than a fee. Once you take a percentage rather than a fee, then it means that your business is dependent on how much of the product that this company produces can be certified as kosher. And it seems to me that creates a tremendous temptation to see something as kosher because you don't want to lose the money. Later in this tube, Moshe Feinstein quotes a Rabbi Rosenberg, who was the head of a kosher organization, and who said that an organization needs to make the same money if it declares something kosher as non-kosher. Otherwise, the organization has a stake in the outcome, which is true, but it's very difficult, even for a large-scale operation. If Coke is a bad example because, whatever. Let's say Coke comes to me, they want my kosher supervision, I'm giving them my kosher supervision, and all of a sudden I realize that batch X had a problem with it, it's non-kosher, and I declare it non-kosher, I'm going to get my same fee. That's in the contract to get my same fee. So we think we're all good, right? Except that if in 1984 they have a problem with 17 batches over the course of a year, they make 20,000 batches a year, 17 batches went bad. So maybe they'll keep me on. But let's suppose they only make 100 batches a year and 17 batches went bad in 84. They'll pay me in 84 because they're required to by the contract. Will they renew the contract for 85? And will that not be on my mind? So this is a very, very difficult part of the issue, especially since there are many places in the Jewish world where the hashgacha is done by the local rabbi, still today. Right? Forget the OU, the OK, the CRC. There are still places where the rabbi is the mashgiach. But the rabbi is mashgiach and he makes the money off of it. I don't see how he could not have a financial stake in continuing the certification. So Moshe Feinstein pointed out it's true for groups as well, and it's a problem. And so therefore, you need to try to find as much possible way to separate the fee from the determinations of kashrut or not, and it's not simple at all. I'm not saying that people don't do it. I'm not saying that it's done wrong. I'm not questioning any particular kashrut organizations or individuals. I'm pointing out the challenges that come up that Moshe Feinstein is pointing out to us. Then he says, and because of that, it also means that let's say the company comes to complain about the mashgiach. Moshe Feinstein says you can't pay attention to it. Now, that's to me again a complicated question. I understand what he's saying. He's saying it because if the mashgiach is saying this isn't kosher and this isn't kosher, this isn't kosher, we don't want to discourage the mashgiach from being able to do that. We want him to have the freedom to have the intellectual honesty to say this something went wrong here, this is non-kosher, right? Perfectly understandable. And then you don't want the company to be able to pressure either him or the organization, because then it puts pressure to ignore things that shouldn't be ignored. All good. And except that, what if you have a mashgiach who is personally abrasive in whatever ways that are not connected in any way to the actual kashrus of the materials or not? Right? So Moshe was worried about, the Mashgiach needs a positive performance review because, you know, and it's almost inescapable. If I have companies, if I am the OU, OK, CRC, whatever, and I'm sending out my traveling Mashgichim, and I have a particular guy goes to his field, his area, and involves 100 companies, and he gets to over the course of the year several times, and he deals with these 100 companies. And I start getting complaints with the companies, you know, he's being too strict, he's being this, he's being that. So the organization theoretically is supposed to say that he's doing his job. But, and here's sort of to me the counterbalance, what if 80 of the companies are saying he's wrong, he acts badly, and he mistreats the customers, and he is inappropriate with certain employees of ours, and he's declaring things non-kosher when I'm pretty sure that it's kosher. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says you can't pay attention to it because then he'll get the idea that he's got to declare things kosher even when they're not, an extremely important point. On the other hand, the kosher organization is going to say, probably should say to itself, it's not supposed to be a negative experience for our companies. We're going to lose the business of the companies when there's no reason why we have to. And maybe this guy's doing something wrong. So there's a balance, I think, that needs to be struck there. Rav Moshe Feinstein making a very valid point, but a balance needs to be struck there in terms of making sure that we have ways of knowing that Mashgichim are doing their job well and properly and appropriately, at the same time as we guarantee them the proper and appropriate independence of determination. Because, of course, also you don't want to have a situation, and sadly this could happen too, where Mashgiach has some personal animus to something at a company for whatever reason that happened, that says not kosher. And the company says thinks they're kosher, and they think they did everything right, and the supervising organization says, oh, we have to believe our guy. Well, you got to also think maybe something wrong with the guy. So complicated issues that come up, they're mostly pointing out. Another place where a Mashgiach might need help is in terms of kashering equipment, which Rav says is a complicated issue, because when you have, you know, large vats of whatever it is you're making stuff, there are standards the government sets up, but a lot of government standards for cleaning are important and valuable for cleaning, but they're not the same standards of halacha for kashering. So an example that Rav Feinstein gives is, you have a kosher vat that had cold milk in it, and then later on, the company's going to put cold meat in it. There's a cleaning you need to do in between. Now, the government has standards, which are fine, but those standards aren't necessarily the halakhic standards, and therefore the Mashgiach has to oversee it. Now, one way to think you might get out of it is by saying, well, they always wait 24 hours between the changeovers, and that means that halakhically, it's not ben yomo, and therefore the taste, whatever it is that could be the problem, is not such good taste. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that whole idea in halacha is a bidiyavad. It's only if it's already happened. But to allow a factory to rely on that regularly, we're not allowed to do that. So it could be the Mashgiach is an expert in this area, and if he is, that's great. And many Mashgiachim develop an expertise so they can understand these issues. But otherwise, you have to make sure you bring in somebody who does know these issues and can tell you how to handle it. We also have to be aware of the areas of halacha of food production that need more supervision than usual. So certainly meat and right, animal products. Oil products are an issue. Pesach products are an issue because you have to so much worry about chametz issues. And then fish, as we've said, because of the problem of being able to skin the fish and then not being able to know which is which. And then he points out here, and this I remember being a controversy, I was never fully sure about what the controversy was. I think there was a controversy at the time. There was a claim that many of the people, when they fished for tuna, they capture bunches of dolphin in there, a minority, but then they just mix it all in, and there was a whole claim that when we buy canned tuna, there's also, unless you have a Mashgiach doing his job very, very well, there's also going to be some dolphin in there, and that shouldn't be allowed. So Moshe Feinstein here addresses not by name or anything, but he says he's heard some people will say that if you go into a certain fishing area, and this area, the boats, you know, in their nets, pull in a majority of fish, and the majority of the fish in the whole area are kosher, you can just rely on that. And you can assume that all the fish we got is, right, the majority is tuna, we can assume that it's all tuna. Right? So there are situations in halacha where we rely on a rove, on a majority, in just that way, and say, yes, and that means that we're allowed to completely ignore the other kinds of tuna. Rav Moshe Feinstein does not accept that. He says, first of all, dolphin are cheaper. So if it was cheaper, I don't know why you wouldn't just go for dolphin and fish dolphin. I think the answer is because people want tuna. So you want to be selling tuna, but it's cheaper to get the dolphins because maybe they're bigger and produce them. And it's also hard to distinguish them. So if the fishermen can get away with it, why wouldn't they get away with it and make a bigger profit? So that difficulty means you need to have greater hashkacha. And then he closes and we'll close as well with a reminder that when somebody says they're the kashrut supervisor, either the individual or the organization, that's a kind of edut, that's a kind of testimony. Doing a bad job in these areas is a kind of false testimony, and therefore he says you need to be very careful to do the job, and you need to make sure that you have a local for faraway companies, as we've said. And he says, got to be an Orthodox rabbi too. He stresses that. He says, don't think you can use a conservative rabbi. A conservative rabbi, actually, he thinks, might be worse than having no mashgiach, because a conservative rabbi might tell us that something that's actually prohibited is permissible, and we can't trust their testimony because they are not trustworthy on kashrus issues for testimony. He closes by saying, this is all obvious, but I just wanted to tell you because it's all important. So, since unfortunately it's not obvious to everybody, it's a reminder that when Moshe Feinstein thought something was obvious, it's not always obvious to us, and therefore he did us a great favor by reviewing some of these important issues of how you have proper hashkacha, proper supervision, to make sure that the food that's produced by various people in various places is the kind of kosher food that we Jews are allowed to eat and enjoy without having to worry that we're violating the Torah. And that is a responsible day for the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet. With thanks to you, to Rabbi Jacob Rabbi David Hochhauser, I bid you a good day.